Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Do not adjust the volume on your podcast. It's good, good, and good martinis today for conservatives as we begin the month of February. Jim, one of the reasons a lot of people ultimately decided to go towards Donald Trump in the November election, when the polls for a long time were not looking good for him, was that with an open Supreme Court seat, they did not like the answers Hillary Clinton was giving. They did not like the likely sort of candidate that she would be most inclined to pick. Donald Trump promised somebody in the mold of Scalia, and with Scalia's family in the front row at the White House last night, Donald Trump made good on that promise by nominating Judge Neil Gorsuch from the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Gorsuch is being absolutely hailed by conservatives whose opinions most conservatives trust a lot, like Ed Whalen, who writes a lot for the bench memos over at National Review. Here's just a couple of clips from Gorsuch last night that should be music to the ears of constitutional conservatives.
Standing here in a house of history and acutely aware of my own imperfections, I pledge that if I am confirmed, I will do all my powers permit to be a faithful servant of the Constitution and laws of this great country. I respect, too, the fact that in our legal order, it is for Congress and not the courts to write new laws. It is the role of judges to apply, not alter, the work of the people's representatives. A judge who likes every outcome he reaches is very likely a bad judge, stretching for results he prefers rather than those the law demands.
Jim, you just want to exhale in relief when you hear words like that. Somebody who's not going to be an activist from the bench. Gorsuch looks like, although it'll be a tough fight, that he's probably going to be confirmed at this stage anyway. But credit where credit's due. Donald Trump promised a conservative justice, and he delivered.
Indeed. Anyone who's thinking of me as a knee-jerk, relentless Trump critic, look, President Trump nailed the choice. Near universal support. Really almost just about nothing you can find in his record to make you say, oh, we might have a David Souter here or something. Greg, correct me if my memory is incorrect. I don't think that that this judge was on the original list that came out during the campaign last time. So even one of the great ironies is that we thought, well, what if he picks somebody else who isn't on this list? We don't even have a guarantee of that. And he still found a super duper terrific, universally respected selection there. When you're on the right, you want somebody who's going to, you know, quote unquote, vote the right way. Obviously, we don't think of this as a legislative role, but you want somebody who's going to see the world philosophically the way you do. A couple of things stand out about this nominee. He's an exceptionally good writer. Legal briefs are not usually fun to read, but there are a couple of people are quoting, and you just kind of like the way he thinks through it and the metaphors and the examples and the way he kind of does his best to make legal concepts clear. Also kind of interesting that he is not, you know, people say, oh, you know, Trump is a threat to civil liberties. This does not appear to be a judge who is a threat to civil liberties. One of the things that I found really interesting is he believed that police coming onto the porch of a property that had no trespassing signs constituted a violation of the Fourth Amendment, right against unreasonable search and seizure. This is a guy who's got kind of a libertarian streak to him in this area and about, you know, resisting government power, not just in terms of giant federal bureaucracies, and also to the police, that as much as we all love and admire the police, we do expect them to honor, the Fourth Amendment has to mean something. So I think this is a terrific choice. Just about all my colleagues are dancing about this. Ed Whalen is just doing cartwheels. This is about as good a pick as you could have possibly expected from President Trump. And so can't wait to get on to the confirmation hearings. And my suspicion is this will be relatively smooth sailing. Part of the aspects of these confirmation fights is you want to avoid giving the other side any good reason to vote no. And I think that that this pick definitely does that.
And even more good news, at least from what we were hearing last night, there were liberal legal minds who you don't usually see giving glowing reviews of conservative nominees. But Lawrence Tribe was very, very high in his estimation of Neil Gorsuch, as was Norm Eisen, a very close ally of Barack Obama's and actually served as one of his ambassadors. They, of course, are both a little bit upset still about what happened with Merrick Garland last year, and they think that could be a stumbling block for Gorsuch. But in the end, One guest I saw on cable news last night said there are now seven Democrats who are at the point of saying they will not filibuster. Not saying they'll support him, but we don't need the Democrats to support him. We just need enough of them to agree not to filibuster because we would like to not have to change that rule if we don't have to. So, Jim, like you said, there's not any red flags here at all. He was confirmed unanimously in 2006, and people like Chuck Schumer and Dianne Feinstein voted for him without any hesitation whatsoever, as did Obama, Biden, and Clinton. So it'll be fun to watch the political twisting here as it goes forward.
Yeah, we should point out, actually, he was approved by voice vote, which means technically nobody could, you know, you wouldn't say, oh, you look back, and there wasn't a roll call vote. They just say, do the ayes have it? Aye. Any nays? And either there were no nays or there were, the nays were so soft and muffled in the back nay, that the chair either didn't hear, chose not to hear, or that. But basically, any senator can request a recorded vote on just about anything. So when you see a voice vote, I know this from, you know, covering the Hill way back when, it generally means this is really uncontroversial. It is so uncontroversial, nobody really wants to even take the time to have a recorded vote so they could argue against somebody later on. That's the sort of thing you do for renaming a post office, Greg. And, so, you know, at the time, this is a nominee who was as controversial as renaming a post office out in, you know, East nowhere, at some other state or something like that. You know, and so now, of course, he's extreme. I really enjoyed my, my colleague, Kevin Williamson, pointing out that, like, so he's this extremist. He's out of the mainstream. He's, you know, so everybody, but, you know, like, so Schumer and Obama and Hillary and all these folks chose to put this extremist on the 11th Circuit. Really? Really? You know, and so, you know, I think there's something to be said about how utterly implausible the arguments against him, at least so far, are.
Yeah. Out of the mainstream. If you're going to have a drinking game on the confirmation process, get ready with some low-volume alcohol or else you're going to be on the floor pretty darn early in this process.
And consult your doctor before beginning the Supreme Court nomination confirmation fight drinking game. Yes.
Anyway, Ben Sasse, the senator from Nebraska, making quite a bit of news with some fun quotes. He says, even though Neil Gorsuch was approved without any trouble 10 years ago, don't be surprised if Chuck Schumer accuses him of planning to kick puppies and heckle piano recitals just because of the politics involved with this process. But as we transition to our second good martini, Ben Sasse also decided, after being at the White House last night, to head over to the Supreme Court, see what was going on over there. Turns out that People for the American Way and some of the pro-abortion groups were out there with already pre-produced signs saying that Gorsuch was extreme and dangerous. But Sasse's favorite, Jim, was the signs that he called Mad Libs, where the sign just said hashtag stop, and then there was a blank box underneath it so they could write in the name of the nominee just in case it was somebody different. This follows on the heels of Jeff Merkley in the Senate Democrats and others this week who had promised to filibuster or resist before they even knew who the nominee was. So the Democrats are just randomly spraying machine gun fire anywhere they can, and they look really stupid doing it.
Yes, but it's single-shot machine gun fire. Because, you know, they don't like those large clip weapons. Greg, you know, Super Bowl Sunday is coming up, and you notice that after the game, all of a sudden the players have caps and T-shirts that say, you know, this Sunday will either say New England Patriots World Champions or Atlanta Falcons World Champions. And if you've ever wondered, hey, wait a minute, how do they get the T-shirts and caps there so fast? Well, the answer is they print up both of them. And so after the game, you have a big stack of teams that say, you know, the losing team, whether it's New England or Atlanta. Right now somewhere there is Carolina Panthers Super Bowl 50 champions shirts and caps. And people wondered what happens to them. Well, it turns out actually they get shipped off to Africa and poor countries where they just need clothes. They just give them away. Sadly, Greg, I have not been able to find any New York Jets AFC champions shirts that apparently are shipped off to some far-off impoverished land. And somebody's getting to walk around with T-shirts celebrating what I wish had happened several years ago. So do you think there's a whole bunch of, like, stop Thomas Hardiman signs floating around? And do they have to ship them off to the third world or something like that? You know, where somewhere there's a stop. So all the losing judges, I think at the very least Thomas Hardiman should get one of those signs, some sort of, you know, memorial plaque to remember. You were really close. And who knows, maybe someday he will be on the Supreme Court. But it does indicate that for all of these groups, look, it's not like, you know, Trump was going to surprise everybody and pick Merrick Garland or something like that. But if he, you know, actually, but if he had, like, would all these groups have turned and said, no, never mind, we're perfectly fine with it? Or are they so wedded to the idea that Donald Trump's picks are terrible that they have to oppose him no matter what? And I think that's one of the things that, you know, I think if you sound like a broken record and you say everything Donald Trump does is terrible, people tune you out. And I think that, you know, none of these groups are nearly as effective as they think they are. People say, oh, they're not about persuading the middle. They're about firing up the lefty base. Look, Greg, you look around. Do you think the lefty base needs much more firing up?
No.
I mean, you know, nuclear reactors explode. You know, there is such a thing as too much firing up. And I think the whole thing, just because it all seems so rote, so predictable, so tired, so hackneyed and exhausted, that I don't think anybody who is persuadable, if there is, you know, a small percentage in the middle there, I don't think anybody is persuaded by this, because as you said, we've heard the term out of the mainstream for every single Republican nominee pretty much ever, certainly in the last generation or so.
Absolutely right. And it's not just over the Supreme Court pick. You see it, of course, over the Trump executive orders and some of the nominees that are still in process. And just as a follow-up to this, yesterday we saw the Democrats on the Senate Finance Committee boycott the vote so that the voting on Steve Mnuchin to be Treasury Secretary and Tom Price to be Health and Human Services Secretary had to be postponed indefinitely. Some were talking about Trump even having to do recess appointments eventually because the Democrats were just not going to budge. That got this reaction from Committee Chairman Orrin Hatch.
Well, they are idiots. Anybody who'd do something like that, it's just a complete breach of decorum. It's a complete breach of committee rules. It's a complete breach of just getting along around here.
And so today the Democrats boycotted again. The Republicans on the committee suspended the rules and unanimously passed both Mnuchin and Price. And now the Democrats say, hey, we never got tipped off about this. We had no idea this was happening. Yeah, pays to show up at your own hearing sometimes.
Was it Woody Allen who said 90% of life is showing up? You know, it's one of those things. I saw this news this morning, actually yesterday morning, Greg, when it said, you know, Democrats said, we're not going to show up for this hearing. We're, you know, I felt like the news was in reruns, Greg, because didn't we see this in Wisconsin where they were like hopping into cars and you know, burning rubber, peeling out of town, hiding in Iowa? And Scott Walker and the Republican state legislature had to send Tommy Lee Jones after them like as the fugitive and bring them back to their job. Like, yeah, well, we won't let you pass this bill because we're going to run away. You can't catch us. Yeah. You know, like this is our government. Really? You know. When you do that, all you're going to do is develop an enormous appetite for the elimination of quorum laws, the idea that you need a certain number of lawmakers present. And deep down, I don't think that's a good idea, because you wouldn't want a handful of lawmakers getting together and deciding, presto changeo, here we are, we've enacted some sort of massive change without a bunch of lawmakers there. On the other hand, like, you know, I remember I was watching the coverage of this in CNN this morning, that, you know, the Democrats like, you know, this is an outrage that the Republicans would have this vote that we, you know, didn't show up for because we were protesting, which doesn't really sound quite as compelling as it sounded in their heads. Look, you're in the minority. It stinks. I get it. We were in that boat not that long ago. You don't really have any ability to influence what happens. You don't have much ability to stop bad, you know, things that you oppose from happening. I get that. I think the best thing you can do in that circumstance, show up, make your argument, make list all the reasons why you think this is a bad idea, try to persuade any of those people in the middle who are, and just be on the record, right? Because right now, these nominees got approved 14-0. As I was tweeting out there, great news. Not a single Democrat voting against Price, Greg. Isn't that great?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, I guess they're fine with them. Now, obviously, they'll say they're not. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we hear the occasional arguments, do your job. Well, I mean, look, you know, what this is doing here, by the way, is an interesting demonstration of a lack of faith in the power of argument, a lack of faith in the ability of persuasion to say, look, because if they really are a terrible choice, and I understand, you know, Price, I think, is fine. But for some of these nominees, they say, oh, they didn't disclose stuff they should have, or they gave answers to the committee that are false. Lay that out, right? At the very least, make the Republican senators sweat this vote, right? If there's really a good argument to be made against these nominees, there is. But deep down, I don't think there is that much of a good argument, because otherwise they wouldn't have to revert to you know, tactics like this.
Amazing, amazing. And one of the things that's happening, of course, is that the Democrats are being egged on by a media who's constantly in hysteria day after day in the Trump administration. So one person has decided here, Jim, to call the media out on this and say it's time to bring back what we would appreciate in the media. And I can't think of anyone better to do it.
The 2016 presidential election cycle convinced me that we need journalistic integrity now more than ever. My name is Dan Rather.
So, Jim,
need it now because we didn't need it in 2004 when I fell for those glaringly obvious fake memos that were created on Microsoft Word that I and Mary Mapes insisted were created on a 1967 typewriter by a man who did not know how to type, requiring the type of typewriter that involved kerning that would have cost about $7,000 that he owned personally and no one ever had any record of him owning. Yeah, not that I'm bitter about that, Dan Rather. Let me just kind of observe that, like, I'm trying to think like of a comparable. If there's a conservative journalist whose career blew up the way Dan Rather's was, you just wouldn't hear about him anymore. They wouldn't be around. They wouldn't be given a platform, much less given one in which they get to lecture everybody else about journalistic integrity, journalistic ethics, and journalistic excellence. So there we are. Where's a hurricane when you need it, right, Greg? or somebody to ask him what the frequency is.
Oh, man. All right. On to the final good martini now. And, Jim, if only this would happen. This is Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air referring to a story written by Todd Vanderwerf over at Vox. Ed writes, finally, a proposal that will unite Americans across the political spectrum. Vox's Todd Vanderwerf writes today that Hollywood should cancel its upcoming Oscars broadcast if it wants to put teeth into its opposition to Donald Trump and his policies. Quoting from Vanderwerf, President Donald Trump's new immigration order, the one many have labeled a Muslim ban because it temporarily bars entry to the U.S. for natives of seven Muslim-majority countries, stops people associated with various Oscar-nominated films from attending the 2017 Academy Awards. That's just one reason the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences should cancel its annual ceremony and instead announce the winners via press release. Vanderwerf goes on to say the Oscars have become semi-famous for speeches calling for political action, but speeches ultimately don't risk all that much because the people delivering them are speaking to a room full of mostly friendly, well-off liberals. Canceling the ceremony altogether would be a bolder and more appropriate act of protest. Jim, it was just a couple of days ago you were ready to take up Andrew Cuomo on his offer to be deported at the head of the line here when it comes to illegal immigrants. I think it's time to take up Hollywood on this one, too.
You know, bravo, Vox. That is a heck of an idea, and we throw our weight behind it, which is may not be a lot of political weight, but for at least in my case, it's a lot of physical weight. So here's the thing. Actually, I'm going to take my tongue out of my cheek here and stop being sarcastic and observing. You know what? If Hollywood said, yes, we are not doing the Oscars this year. We're going to announce the winners by press release. We are not holding the ceremony. This is our way of saying this is our most clear form of protest that this is not business as usual, that Trump is a genuine threat to American values and he's changing the way the government operates. And, you know, look, that would be a strong message. I you know, as much as I wouldn't agree with it, I actually think that that would be the sort of thing that would really turn heads, maybe get the public and maybe even, you know, I don't know if it would persuade Republicans, but it would be something better than the usual preachy speeches like, you know, we got over at the Golden Globes. I understand, I guess, at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, it was just more of the same. And we all kind of know, you know, assuming, you know, barring some, you know, we all expect the next Oscar is going to be more of the same, more lecturing. Oh, I can't believe Trump is the president. Oh, this is, you know, it's the dawn of American fascism. You can probably guess, and I'm sure someone will have preening insufferable progressive rhetoric Oscar awards speech bingo, and you'll be able to predict like a good, you know, half dozen phrases and arguments and things that you'll hear that night. And, you know, I guess there are lots of liberals who like it, and if so, great. I don't think they're particularly persuading anyone. I don't think that, but this would be something where if they genuinely said, this is what we're seeing in Washington is so un-American, we're not going to do what we do, I actually think they would send a message. Now, I don't think they'll do it, but I kind of think that, you know, the other thing, if they did do it, there are quite a few people who would go, whew, and really enjoy it. And I think the only people who would really be upset are the dress designers who get to, you know, show off all their work on the red carpet.
Oh, man. A lot of attention, as you mentioned, at the Golden Globes and the SAG Awards for people ripping on Trump. One who didn't get a lot of attention, I'm sorry to say I don't remember her name right now, but she won an award because of her excellent performance in Hidden Figures, the story of the black women who overcame prejudice to be critical of figures in the dawn of the space program in the United States. Her speech paid tribute to the women who did that and said they didn't complain. They just went about what they could do, and they got it done, and America was much better for their efforts. A much more impressive, much more uplifting speech than just a bunch of ragging on somebody they don't like politically. Very impressive.
And again, like, you know, maybe leading by example is one. Because I remember last year it was, you know, the Hollywood discussion about insufficient diversity. Or Hollywood talking about how terrible the rest of America was for its uncouthness. I also understand that studio heads are also going to protest the actually, I know I remember that. It was the woman who was on Medium, Patricia Arquette.
Yes.
Gave her speech about unequal pay for women. And everybody in Hollywood applauded that. Uncompletely aware of the fact that she was arguing about Hollywood, right? I mean, you know, it's not Walmart that's saying, oh, you're a woman cashier, okay, you're making less, right? I mean, you know, this is something you see in something that's a little more subjective and talent-based, and also, you know, Hollywood accounting and agents fighting and stuff like that. But there's a remarkable lack of self-awareness there. So I think it's one of the reasons that lots of us tune out Hollywood when it starts telling us how to live our lives. So anyway, we'll see if we get more of it, or whether they take this bold, exciting, visionary concept from Vox and canceled the Oscars. Here's hoping, Greg.
Jim, have a good day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.